Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Highlight of my league. I look forward to it. And of course, we will get to your questions in just a little bit. But first, we'll talk our own about just what happened this week and the week coming up. So we got Kevin here. We've got Eli. So we'll go to Kevin first. You were in Tampa Bay, in St. Pete this week. Tell us about that general experience. It was your first time getting to see the Marlins on the road and covering on the road. That's all I'm familiar with. But how was that experience for you? And just what was that two-game series like?
It was great. It was really fun. I had an amazing time. You would think that, you know, I was going in, you know, with expectations pretty low with when it comes to going into the Trop, just hearing, you know, what you've heard before, that it sucks, it's not nice. I really liked it. I thought it was a nice stadium. From the outside, it looks horrid, I'll tell you that much. But from the inside, I mean, the press box is really nice. They honor the team very well with the many museums they have. It was a great experience overall, and then when you go to, you know, on the field, play on the field, it was rough for the first game. Obviously, Miami just wasn't able to get anything going off of Tyler Glasnow, who, I mean, you know, usually his ERA is a little higher at home, or was entering to start, but after a dominant start against the Orioles, he dominated Miami, and I mean, good. I mean, he's a great pitcher, and Miami was just not able to get anything going. Even the day after the game, in post-game, Skip was still talking about Glasnow, how good he was. So, then game two, obviously, I think the story was simple. It was Sandy Alcantara in his 9-inning game, and he dominated, man. I believe he just gave up one home run, and he was really good. I mean, everything was working for him. Mechanics were good. Velo was really good. And then, obviously, Stallings going out there another day after looking like he was injured. You know, he had an injury, I believe, with his neck. His neck was all red the day after on postgame when we were talking to him. And the bottom of the order really getting it going. That's one thing that stood out to me. I don't know if, you know, it stood out to you guys, but the bottom of the order is kind of getting it going. So I really think that, you know, Miami's offense looked like what it should have. Obviously, Luis Urias got 200 career RBIs, so good for him on that end. And it was a great game overall. That was a big, big win. They really, really needed that one. They needed to win this one to go into some type of momentum entering Mickey Week, and obviously they were able to take 2 out of 3, all the, you know, despite that being a pretty ugly series.
Couldn't get myself unmuted, but yes, ugly indeed. Well, I don't know if there's such thing as a bad series win without any injuries, but that was a pretty bad series win. Definitely some very lucky moments today, but going to the Tigers series real quick. Oh, just jumping ahead here. the Marlins bottom half of the lineup really, really, really stepped up. And, you know, some of these guys, depending on what happens in the next 2 days, they may be out of a job, specifically Segura at third, maybe Avi as well. And, but they all really, really stepped up and kind of just showed their worth. And offensively, this Marlins team has shown what they could be with them all at their peaks, but this team is too streaky outside of Luis Arraez to really put all that together at one point, and not so much just have that be, but to bank on it as well. And just very, very flawed series for sure. You know, starting pitching went pretty well today for Lazardo, not for Lazardo's standards, but he still pitched a good game, all things considered. But AJ Puck, man. Well, I guess we'll jump to this already. What has happened to AJ Puck? The guy has been the worst reliever in baseball since the month of May began. I mean, the guy is just terrible. We'll go to Eli here. What exactly has happened to AJ Puck? And even he got moved up into more of a medium leverage spot today, the seventh inning, got him out of those final two innings and give him a chance to potentially save the game. What has happened to this guy?
I would say in particular, it's been this month of July. It was that final week before the All-Star break where things went bad, where it's not that he didn't have a couple of bad games earlier than that, but that's when he started to get hit hard. I mean, it's one thing if occasionally he walks better or occasionally a couple of balls in play don't go his way, but he's been getting hit so hard over almost the last month now. And it's been happening in so many important situations too. There's some guys where it's kind of a cliche that if you put a closer in non-save situations, then there you don't perform the same. But with him, it's been everything. It's been save situations. It's been tie games. It's been now that he's out of the closer's role, it's been in a setup situation. And I think there was even one time where he came in with the team trailing and even struggled to get through that inning. Yeah, he is just lost right now. And it's one thing when a guy is not on top of your game and he falls down in the hierarchy of the bullpen, but he is the least effective pitcher on this entire pitching staff right now. He should not be pitching in any consequential situations at all. Like anybody you can think of on this active roster at the moment should be in the game before he is, because this is a severe issue. This is him, especially today, going up against some not particularly potent hitters, and they're seeing the ball off of him and they're hitting the ball, both his fastball and his sweeper. It's really been both of those pitches have been issues for him. And it hasn't, the one thing that I think a couple of his worst moments have come against right-handed batters. But then today, what even drives the point home about how much he's struggling is when he gets hit by a lefty. It was Kerry Carpenter that was the one that delivered the big hit with the bases loaded. A lefty on lefty matchup and the sweeper in that matchup. And I got to see what the count was. I think it may have been, yeah, it was on a first pitch. I think he got him on. It is falling apart every which way for him. There's no pattern to it. The only thing is he's been consistently terrible in his appearances. And until they need to do something to straighten it out, there's something fundamentally wrong with the way that he's finishing his pitches, because he's not putting them in the spots he wants them to. And even when he thinks he is, it's not playing the same. It's not getting swings and misses. It's not getting weak contact. And thankfully, they acted a little quickly. They didn't wait until the deadline to make reliever moves. They made two of them in advance. That was a bright spot of the series, is that Lopez and Robertson combined for three appearances, three scoreless appearances during the course of this weekend. And they needed both of them to finish off this game on Sunday. That makes a difference. And that's because of the severity of Puck's struggles. I think that pushed the team to act 5 or 6 days earlier than they would have otherwise, because it really has been a dramatic fall for him. Unfortunately, they need to go back to the drawing board with him. And in the meantime, I would hope that Skip recognizes the reality of the situation, that everybody else in the meantime should be pitching in situations ahead of AJ Puck when the game is on the line.
So I guess I'll present two scenarios here. Would you guys say it's more feasible to bring someone up from AAA right now, or try and see if you can go get another reliever, despite the fact that the reliever market's about to get
really, really inflated with the deadline right there. And to your point, the Marlins acted pretty early. They got Robertson at a premium price, 100%. That was definitely a good move to get him as early as possible. But which would you guys, both you and you, or, and Kevin, say would be a more feasible option?
No, you're not trading for another reliever, especially not another rental reliever right now. You need those assets to address the starting rotation and to address the lineup, or at least one of those two. Andrew Nardi is coming back, we think, on Tuesday. He's about to come back. And you look at the bullpen depth chart when he returns on paper, I think you have seven guys that you trust more than Puck. And it's a pretty deep bullpen. Thankfully, the big sigh of relief this weekend was Tanner Scott, because he strained his calf and he's pitching less than 2 days later. I can't remember seeing that before. Somebody diagnosed with a calf strain, even if it's a mild one, and then coming back and pitching and doing his job 2 days later. So that was a huge sigh of relief that he's still there. In addition to him and Robertson and Lopez, you have Chagua, Okert, Brazoban, and now that's an interesting choice between Soriano. Now that I look at it, who is... Yeah, they have to choose between Brazoban and Soriano for the final spot when Nardi comes back. And I think it's pretty clear that Brazoban is going to be the one that could squeeze down for the moment. Soriano has been great as well recently. So yeah, you have seven guys ahead of Puck in the hierarchy once that happens, including George Soriano, in my opinion. And it's a pretty good bullpen. It's one with a decent amount of swing and miss, a decent amount of ground balls. And at the very top end, you have the guy that has been there and done that before in Robertson. So to me, I would not spend any more assets on relievers. You got to just trust the guys that you have. There's some interesting names in AAA that could come up later in the year. And now potentially you're squeezing Brazoban to AAA. And that's a guy that we know at certain times has been immensely valuable to this team. So I think the bullpen is set.
Shout out to George Soriano. That guy, George Soriano, has been amazing ever since he was called up. And he's been, you know, taking these long relief roles for the most part. And I guess that was going to be that was going to happen today, since Tigers scored four early runs. I guess they were just going to give Soriano some long relief. And I guess Miami came back, and I think things changed there, and that's why they put Puck in. But man, this guy has been so good. 1.98 ERA. I believe that's what it is at right now. And this guy's been really good. That slider, Eli was highlighting it today, that, you know, even when it's middle, it's still very good, and it generates whiffs and swings, and it's such a good pitch. Isaac always says that he has a better slider than Max Meyer, and he really may. I mean, it's that good, but we'll see. I like Soriano. I want to give him more high leverage. I think today we kind of saw it, I guess you could say, with how things turned out where Miami went, you know, back and scored four runs in that case. But we'll see what happens. I do think I would like to see him like some seventh inning roles for now. But if he continues to do what he's doing, he deserves a lot of credit for what he's been doing. And I'm a big George Soriano guy. I've been a big George Soriano guy since, like, I think 2 years now. So shout out to him for what he's been doing. And obviously, I mean, he was the big part of today's win, keep holding, you know, the lead, giving Miami a chance to come back and do something. And obviously that happened today.
Agree. Eli had a pretty good lead in talking about the assets here. We'll get to our trade deadline talk, because I'm sure every question that we're probably going to get is going to be trade related, which is good. That's what we want. Love talking about trade. I know some of us here on Fish on First said last night, trade talk's starting to get exhausting, but we're here in the thick of it. It's a very interesting deadline. Don't know what's going to happen with the lack of sellers and the abundance of buyers. So bullpen seems to be set. Marlins got two arms. A lot of us said they probably need to go get one, maybe two arms. I guess they technically, I mean, they got two, but they had to trade one to get it. So it's a net gain of one arm. And Nardi's coming back this week. Bullpen, in theory, should be pretty good. Love what we saw from David Robertson today, by the way. Definitely thought he was going to blow the save just because it's a very Marlins thing to do. But he didn't, so that's good. But two needs definitely stand out for the Marlins still. I think one is probably more likely to get than the other at this point. And the more likely option would be back-end starting pitcher for the rotation to eat some innings. It definitely seems like that's coming. The question is, who? Jordan Montgomery has been taken off the board. He's a Texas Ranger. Max Scherzer got traded, but that was never happening, so I don't know why I even mentioned him. Verlander also will not be happening.
the Cubs are not selling, so no Stroman. And the other thing I said that the Marlins need is definitely a middle of the order bat. I mean, Bellinger will not happen. So the Cubs are out of the seller's market. It's getting pretty slim in terms of sellers. And so teams are going to overpay for some guys, but I really thought about it today after watching yesterday's offense especially. I might be okay with Kim overpaying for particular players, and one of those being Candelario out of Washington, D.C. He might be the best available bat on the market to this point. Definitely what the Marlins need. The report is also out there that the Marlins are pushing hard for Gleyber Torres, but the asking price is too much. New York media kind of blew that one out of proportion. I don't expect it to happen. But for the deadline, expect the unexpected. So turn it to you guys. What do you guys think is the most likely thing to happen at this deadline? Just any general thoughts about what's been out there on Twitter, rumors, just things of that nature?
Well, literally, I think like a minute before we started, they put out the Jack Flaherty one. So I guess we could go into that one. Obviously, we saw them today. The Cardinals trade away Jordan Montgomery for a couple prospects. And I know the Rangers also got reliever Chris Stratton, I believe. So I guess that was, I guess, why we saw the trade that they made today. Flaherty's all right. I mean, he's had a pretty good year. ERA, 4.43, FIP, 4.23. Not the nicest things to see, but, I mean, aside from that, still a guy who's going to eat you innings and get some good outs. I believe his start in Miami was one of the better ones this season. He went 6 2/3. He struck out 5, didn't allow an earned run, only walked 2. So, yeah, I guess if you want to use that into any account. But aside from that, I think really that's, if I'm correctly thinking, that may be probably one of the last options available, unless you want to go to Oakland and just, at this point, just take the flyer on Paul Blackburn. But aside from that, I think Flaherty is the move here if you're looking at starting pitching. Again, I'm blanking out on other names. Oh, Lorenzen's still on the board there, so we'll see what happens there. And, yeah, so Lorenzen's there. You also have Eduardo Rodriguez if you want to take him. He's had a nice year, and then obviously a Jack Flaherty. So those are the three pitchers I would be looking at right now. So, yeah.
I believe that the Marlins are really trying to figure out some creative packages here. With Flaherty, we've talked about Michael Lorenzen before. With guys like this that are rentals and also starters that this team is not going to really have any interest in trying to bid to re-sign in free agency, you're not comfortable giving up one of your better prospects, which is what they're going to have to do for a decent starting pitcher. You're not as comfortable doing that if it's only that pitcher on his own. And so that's why the Cardinals have been naturally mentioned as a fit, because they also have a lot of bats that are movable. And the one, like, yeah, the lower level package, I'd say the basic package that I think could make a pretty decent difference, but also is manageable for the Marlins, would be getting Flaherty and somebody like Paul DeJong, who's having a much better season, and who I think is a club option for next year and the year beyond that, but he's a potential free agent unless he really goes off late this year. That'd be a guy they declined the option. He's just a rental. But he would really raise the floor of, you know, their offense a little bit on that left side of the infield. Excluding today, you know, Segura is just not going to give you any power there. Today was kind of an anomaly from him. And defensively, it's really not getting much better from him either at third base. So when you get somebody like DeJong, either he plays shortstop and you move, you know, Birdie and Wendell to third more often, or, you know, I think even DeJong himself could play third base. There's a couple different things they could do there, but they do need some help on the infield. You know, today is really the anomaly to have home runs from both Cooper and from Segura. That's not going to happen very often. That might never happen again the rest of the year to have both of them at the exact same time do that. That's the missing component of this offense, is power from their infield. I've put out the stats before where, compared to the Braves have like individual guys on their infield who have homered more often than every single Marlins infielder combined. It's not sustainable, and it hasn't really sustained to this point. It's been a bad offensive team for the most part, and I think that's the main deficiency that they address. So they could do that with a package like that. And Candelario is, again, the one really obvious fit. You know, there's nothing too bold about it, but there are so many teams interested in him that just to get him alone is going to cost quite a bit in terms of prospect capital. And you look at that Nationals roster, and there's not a whole lot of appealing supplementary pieces on their roster that you would even want in a package. for there. So I think that's going to come into the calculus as well. They could feel like they could get more shopping done in one spot with the Cardinals. Then I think that is slightly more likely than them getting Candelario. I just feel like they would lose. I think they're trying to bid for Candelario, but I think it's going to reach a point where it's just not feasible for them to give up what the Nationals ultimately want for him. And that I think the Cardinals are a more likely way to go there.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Did put out there in a tweet that some newspaper in St. Louis had said that there had been a multitude of scouts in their stadium as of late. Marlins are there, but that's kind of typical, especially this time of year. Guys are always scouting. I mean, it is their job to scout these guys, but I did see that a new seller has kind of hit the market today. I mean, kind of suspected that maybe they'd sell off their sellable assets, but there was a name I was a little surprised in there, the Mariners. They did say that Teoscar Hernandez is for sale. He's a free agent at the end of this year. He's in his final year of arbitration right now. Kind of suspected he could get traded. I suggested that privately amongst us a while back, but everyone said no just because there's not really a fit, which is understandable. But Ty France has been made available, which was one I did not really expect. But with the way that Garrett Cooper has been playing as of late and the news that the Marlins were in on Carlos Santana, another first baseman, could Ty France or anyone on Seattle's roster be an option? I know some of you listeners have suggested maybe Eugenio Suarez and try and get them to eat a little bit of the contract in Seattle, but I don't know how the Marlins could pull that one off. But what are your guys' thoughts of what Seattle might have to offer and if they could become a surprise seller here in the next couple of days?
I did mention them, I think last week, I circled Paul Sewald as one of the righty relievers that I liked, somebody that has a lot in common with David Robertson at this point. And as I mentioned before, I don't think they're now are interested in going that far for another righty reliever. But that was one that I thought was a really interesting fit. And unlike Robertson, he is the guy that had a year of control remaining beyond this year. So I'm curious to wonder, hang on, how far those conversations may have gotten on Sewald. Ty France is not, I mean, he's having a worse year than Cooper is, or roughly as bad. He's a guy that obviously was very good as of last year, but so was Cooper as of last year. And as an overall player, I like him a little bit more. And of course, the big factor is he's controllable beyond this year. He is for 2024 and 2025 via arbitration. And he does have some versatility to play other infield positions. So that itself is a little useful when we're talking about third base just a moment ago. France is somebody who came up originally as that, I think, being his primary spot. And I would think that he could still play there in emergencies or slightly even more often than that. So he's somebody to keep in mind. He just has not been performing this year. So I don't know why you really go too far to get him. Considering that especially of late is when he's really fallen off. You know, for most of the year, he was kind of in the range of his career norms. But this last month for France has been a disaster. So I'd be up to the Marlins to take a really close look at him and see if they can figure if they have an adjustment in mind on the fly for him. Otherwise, I don't really see that as a fit. I think you have to get even more creative. On their roster, I like the idea of Eugenio Suarez more because he has the bigger raw power over there. He's the guy that's really good in scoring situations. And he's a more natural third baseman than even France is. But that's the one that I'm not all that sure if he'd be available for them. That's a little trickier because of the money that he's still owed, but also the fact that the Mariners offense on its own is a little shaky moving forward. Like they're not in a position where they're super excited to trade away bats that are under contract, knowing that they'll need those guys next year to have a chance. So, yes, that's one that I don't know is quite as available at this moment, but Suarez would be, to me, a better fit for this Marlins team right now than France would be.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was looking out the stats, and man, France has been struggling this past month. He's hitting under 200. It's not good. I think right now, if you're looking at Seattle, the name to look at is Gino, is Eugenio Suarez. So I think that's the name to look at for Seattle. Obviously, I think the other name I saw pop up, and I have to look back, I think the last name is Ford. It was their catcher, and he has been pretty damn good for them. I'm going to go look now. Mike Ford, I believe.
Mike Ford is not a catcher. Mike Ford is a DH and an emergency first baseman.
All right, yeah. So Mike Ford was the name I saw, I think, on Twitter the other day. He's playing pretty well. 130 WRC plus, but doesn't get on base too much, strikes out at a high rate. So that's the name I saw. I saw someone pop it up. I don't know exactly who, but I'll have to find that one soon. But yeah, that's the name I heard. I like Cal Raleigh, obviously. 26 years old. You have, I believe, their top prospect coming up soon. So
he's got years of control. I don't think they'll trade
him. Yeah, but this guy's 26, Grant. I mean, just think of it like that.
I mean, it would be peak value, but I don't like how much the Marlins would have to give up to get him. That would be pretty expensive, given the fact that the catcher market is quite literally non-existent now. The Cubs aren't selling. It's like Elias Diaz, and I think that's it.
Yeah, I mean, that was just the names I'm looking at, you know, on Seattle. But aside from that, I think Gino's the way to go here. I can't think of another name. And I know Romeo's going to say Jose Caballero, who's his boy. But, no, I think Gino's
the way to go. Once we wrap up, we'll have to bring in Romeo. He's already requested. And he lost a possibility of
dropping shout outs.
He lost it because I don't think the Marlins are making any more trades. He also kind of got his hopes and dreams crushed by Craig last week. But it really doesn't make that much sense for the Rockies to trade him at this point, at least, unless someone overpays out the wazoo. But yeah, I mean, it's getting interesting. We won't yap about trades too much more. I want to listen to what you guys have to say, and we'll tell you if someone's possible or not, any positions of need, ways to attack it, potential trade packages. But real quick, we'll preview the week ahead. It could look a lot different this time next week. It could look a whole lot different this time next week, but it's where the schedule starts to get really, really, really tough. Four games set against the Phillies, which I believe is the most important series of the year. Marlins have played the Phillies very well as of late, and taking three out of four against the Phillies would be massive in the wild card race. I mean, a split would help you tread water 100%. I think all the Marlins really have to do is just go 500 from here on out, and their name is fair minimum in the conversation. Some of these teams are sure to fall off, especially with flawed teams not really making too many moves. I think if the Reds don't go trade for a pitcher the next 2 days, they're going to completely fall off the face of the earth. The Giants probably need some help. The Diamondbacks probably need some help. But then this weekend, very, very tough series against the most aggressive team at the deadline so far, Texas Rangers. Very, very nervous about that one. I think after these two trades, and depending on what they do the next couple of days, I think they may be my new AL pennant winner selection. I've got the Braves winning the World Series no matter what at this point, but the Rangers look pretty nice right now, and the Marlins have to go there for a three-game set this weekend. So anything you guys want to point out in terms of the current roster and what lies ahead this week?
Tough week. Philly just, I think they got walked off today by the Pirates, if that's correct. So good for Miami. They're coming off a loss against Pittsburgh, but you have Edwards, Sandy, Brax, and Johnny Cueto going for them for Miami this week. And then you've got to face, I guess, that top of the Phillies pitching staff. You have Ranger Suarez, Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, and Tyjon Walker. So in that first game, Tyjon Walker, game one. So tough game. I believe when Philly came down here, Miami was fairly competitive, if I'm correct. They may have taken 2 out of 3, but overall, you need to take this. This is a huge game, as you said, Grant. I think this game means more than what's coming up for the team after that, just given how much implications this has on a wild card race. Because after Tuesday, we're not going to be talking about, you know, this is an important game for the deadline. We're going to be talking about this is an important game for the wild card race and where Miami finishes if they end up making the postseason. So that's how I see it as moving forward. Miami has put themselves in that buyer's market, and I think we should be talking more about how much this implicates for that wild card, because you would love to see a wild card game played here in Miami. And that's where they make the push for that first wild card, which they stood at for a long, long time. So let's see if Miami can take it. I mean, they were able to beat Philly last season here, opening week. They're able to take 3 out of 4, I believe, against them, and hopefully they can do it again. So Miami usually fares decently well against Philly, so it should be a really good series. And I know Miami would have taken that game. I think they would have taken 2 out of 3 just a couple weeks ago before Christian Pache hit the homer on Puck.
And real quick, before we get Eli's thoughts, I do want to point out what you did say, that, yeah, whatever happens this weekend kind of happens, but you definitely got to get some up on the Phillies. I think as long as you escape Arlington, Texas with one win, I'd be happy. Even if you lose 2 out of 3, I think I'd be happy, depending on what happens against the Phillies. Take 3 out of 4 against the Phillies, you're smooth sailing. You can afford to lose the Rangers series as long as you don't get swept. That after that, if you want to really look ahead, they go to Cincinnati, which I think the Marlins would match up a lot better with the Reds than they did earlier in the season, back when both teams didn't really have any playoff aspirations. The Reds were in legit rebuild mode, and the Reds took 2 out of 3 against the Marlins. So I think this time around, it's going to go a little bit different. I do think the Marlins would probably beat up on the Reds this time, but you can't look too far ahead, I guess, in this perspective. I'm trying to play head-to-head matchups, but it is definitely a true statement to say the Marlins have a very, very tough road ahead. And if you want to even look even further past the Reds, you got Yankees, Astros, Dodgers, back-to-back-to-back. So, Eli, what do you think about this week coming ahead?
I think you have been talking about this for a long time. You, Mr. Look Ahead to the tough part of the schedule. It's finally here. We finally reached a point where the competition is as tough as anybody. I think statistically, the strength of schedule for the Marlins in August and beyond is as tough as any other team in baseball. This is where they get tested. And I got a message from one of our followers, Chris Miola, and he wanted me to kind of just address the reality that this Marlins team, even though they've been winning games, I think anybody looking at it objectively would say teams that they're neck and neck with in this wild card race, and probably the Phillies more so than all of them, those teams have superior overall talent and depth to this point. I think the Phillies, for one, they do, especially when it starts at their rotation. Their rotation is deeper than the Marlins, or at least deeper in guys that you would trust the rest of this year, whereas the Marlins have a couple of young guys that you don't know exactly what you're going to get from them as they reach innings totals that they've never pitched before. But going all the way through their lineup all the way from the top to the bottom of their lineup, they have guys that can do damage on this Phillies team. And they've reached this point, even with some guys that have been underperforming for them to this point in the year. This is where things get really tested. This is where the Marlins magic to this point in the season, where it's going to be really hard for them to fake it and to get past these games against teams that have really deep rosters, against teams that can like shut you down. There are fluke games like yesterday where the Marlins get shut down in a bullpen game, but there are also certain matchups, and like the Phillies being one of them, that they have actual like starting pitching talent that could really silence this team for an extended period of time. This is where you're really tested, where thankfully they've made some moves to this point, but it's all these other teams they're about to face. All these other teams are going to be buying over the next couple of days as well. The Phillies are going to add to their roster. That's the one guarantee with Dave Dombrowski as your GM. They're going to continue adding talent. The Rangers have been a team that were good as they were, and yet they've done more than any other team in baseball so far during this deadline season to continue to like build up talent on their team. We'll see if Scherzer lines up to face the Marlins during that series. I'd say it's a pretty good chance that he does at some point. they're going against teams that are already good and that are going to continue to get better. And for this Marlins team, that they're making the moves that they have the capital to make, but also they're going to be so reliant on these guys coming back from injury for Avi and for Jazz. They're going to be so reliant on those guys to be the best versions of themselves. So far, so good with Avi and with Jazz. We think that's just any day now that he'll be back as well. Those guys are going to be so crucial to this Marlins team, just because in Jazz in particular, there's nobody available on the trade market offensively that in as an overall position player that I think is going to be as impactful as simply getting Jazz back into the mix. So a lot of things are going to have to go right for this team to make the playoffs, and it is a possibility, but they're simply going to have to play better than they have to this point in the season. Even though it feels like they've overachieved, they are going to have to dig down deep and perform even better moving forward.
So per Fangraphs, the Marlins are going to have to face in Texas Montgomery, Dunning, our favorite guy Dunning, and John Gray. So they would for now escape Max Scherzer. Obviously, that could change any minute, but that's what it looks like. And it would be Lizardo, Cabrera, Sandy for that series. So
I think Fangraphs had Yuri starting this week, so I don't know how much.
Yeah, I know. I would look at it with a light grain of salt, but, you know.
I love my guy, Dane Dunning, man. That's my main guy, if you know.
That's only
you two know. I love Dane Dunning, man. What a guy. All right, that's enough of us, unless any of you guys have parting thoughts, interrupt me. But we're going to go to the fan questions now. Waited a little longer to do it today, but I've been very, very excited. I want to hear your thoughts about the trade market and what the rest of the season has in store. First, consider becoming a super subscriber, super follower, whatever you want to call it. We do it directly on our site now on fishonfirst.com, and it's just a base of $3 a month. But what are you paying for? All access to everything Fish on First. You get all sorts of benefits, all access to our gift database, giveaways, prizes. You can play fantasy sports with us. Romeo, who we're about to bring in here, won our fantasy football league. We have our own fantasy baseball league. It's only for the super subscribers. We've got we do all sorts of giveaways. Like I said, I think we've given away tickets a couple times this year. It ends up paying for itself. You get to do prediction time with us, and I made series predictions for every series. Might be a little too late to catch up to the top of the leaderboard now, but next year, if you win, you get a pretty cool prize. Our guy Daniel Rodriguez last year got a cool Williams Esposito shirt, and he still rocks a lot. So definitely worth it 100%. And you can also get the game notes for every game. I call it the Marlins Bible. All sorts of great information there. I will definitely be looking forward to reading those in a couple of weeks when the Marlins come to my hometown of Cincinnati. I will be there. I got the credential email today, by the way. But the reason why we bring this up during these spaces is because one of the benefits also is you get first priority to speak in these spaces. And it really came through last week if you were here listening to Craig. And you got your question to Craig. It definitely pays for itself. Again, it's a base of $3 a month. If you're feeling generous, you can donate more. Most of the super subscribers do donate more. So we appreciate all you guys who have already done it. If you're even thinking about it, just go to fishonfirst.com. It should be in the tab. Eli can maybe direct you. So we're bringing in Romeo now. Again, any one of you guys can request to speak in these spaces. You don't have to be a super subscriber. We want to hear from everyone, whether you're a Marlins fan, just a baseball fan in general. We're all baseball fans, first and foremost. So, Romeo was in here. Well, let's hear it tonight. No Justin Lawrence, so he will not be a Marlins, it seems.
Wait, before Romeo says anything, Romeo, I have to apologize to you. I meant to come back in and give you a high five earlier today, and I didn't, and I apologize.
It's all right. I only wanted to ask you how your Sabbath was.
It was all right.
There you go. How you guys doing? First and foremost, happy Sunday. I joined like halfway through. I just got home from work. A name that is kind of underrated. I still don't think the Red Sox are going to go far, if I'm going to be honest. Even though they got my favorite player in the league, and Rafi Devers. Chris Martin is the name. I feel like 2-year contract.
They're not parting with him.
Oh,
Lewis,
he's been too crucial Lewis for them. They're not parting with him.
Yeah, I figured. But
Lewis loves him, though. I will tell you that. Lewis is a big fan of him. That's a great name to bring up. But I do think that at this point, Boston, I think they'll try to go for it, especially now that the Yankees look like they're done.
Shambles.
Yeah, it's not good. So, you know, it's a good name. I do agree with you. It's a great name, actually. I don't think he walks almost anybody. So that's someone who we were all, I know Eli, Lewis, and I, when we did the off-season videos with the shopping list, that was a name that we had on there, because just the ability to strike out guys and just not walk guys is huge. And, you know, when I say not walk, he barely walks guys. He walked like 10 guys in total last season. So that's a great, you know, great name, but I just don't think he's getting dealt this season. And if Boston doesn't end up going for him, he's going to be crucial, as Noah said.
Yeah.
Anything else?
How much? I actually got to look at his contract. Hold on, one second.
What are we talking about?
Who is it?
Mitch Peller. I figure that he's not going to be on that team either.
Which color? Let's see.
I just don't think they can afford a starter with that many years of control, meaning in terms of the prospect capital it would take to acquire Keller. He's had a really good year. If he was somebody like this that had 1 year of club control remaining or less, then maybe. But it's going to be, it'd have to take a lot of creativity to get the value that the Pirates want with him. I did see that they were willing to listen on him, considering how many of the other starters on this market are rentals. You know, he'd bring back a huge return. I feel like if he was, they're really motivated to move him, they're just going to get outbid. Like, they just don't, I don't know who would be the centerpiece going back to the Pirates that can compete with a traditional top prospect that this Marlins team just doesn't have at the moment.
Yeah.
So on Mitch Keller real quick, my apologies, I had to take a quick break, but I explored the possibility. I almost wrote an article on him until I realized just how valuable he's going to be. That's a high price to pay, like Eli said. But like Eli said, you also get creative. Maybe you do pay that high price right now, and you look at, you know, one of the other starters the offseason once everyone's healthy, and you don't really have to worry about like managing innings and that kind of thing. Maybe you include one of them in said package, preferably like Ever Cabrera or Trevor Rogers, which I don't know what any of their values are at this point, but it's a decent idea.
Yeah. I figured that more people would be here and I could talk about next year, because it's never not too late to talk about next year. So
you can go ahead.
I will just say that I'm still very, very, very concerned about Trevor Rogers. Like, very concerned. The fact that he's...
I think he's done for the year.
And I know he's done for the year, but what is going on with him is my big question right now.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't pitched since he got hurt, and like
he hasn't thrown. He's still a no throw.
He's still a no throw.
He was about to return, and then he hurt his non throwing shoulder, and he's a no throw still.
Mm. Yeah,
concerning.
That is concerning, especially.
You know, and he's out at the ballpark almost like every day and everything. So, you know.
Yeah. So, back to what I was going to say. If you do end up getting rid of Victor Mesa Jr. this season, a name you could look at, he's going to be a little bit pricey, right, for next year, but he would instantly become one of our top prospects when it comes to hitting. If they do get rid of any control center field, Jose Ramos, Panamanian from the Dodgers, he's in their Double-A right now. Has like 26 bombs, I believe. Somewhere up there. It's up, I believe. I know it's double digits. I just don't know how much it is. He's fast. I watched him during WBC, like I did with Lawrence. His swing, it's not the worst, but it could be a little bit better. He didn't have the greatest WBC. He could have had a little bit better. But he's a name that if you're willing to try and get your, I know, like I said, he's going to be a little bit pricey. He's going to be pricier than most. I know he was one of their top prospects, but if someone like that can get up on the market, not this year, but like in the off season, that would be a name I'd look at. If you're trying to update.
Ramos from the Dodgers, right? Right, Romeo?
Yeah. Yeah, Jose Ramos.
Okay. Yeah, my life's a lot easier there. I mean, if you're going to go for, I think that would be more of an off-season type of thing.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
it comes to,
he suggested
like,
you know, getting year. He did.
Okay. Okay. I was blanking out totally. Yeah, I like the player.
Right. Evaldi also just got hurt, I think. I seen that he was hurt. I don't know how old that was.
I did see that.
I felt so bad for him.
And then, like 20 minutes later, the Rangers traded for who's this guy, Jordan Montgomery. So that's funny.
Yeah,
I still hope. I hope Evaldi recovers though. He was having a great year.
Cy Young conversation for sure.
He was somebody I thought I thought possibly that the Red Sox would go after him and bring him back there, but now that he's hurt. And now that the Rangers are literally buying everything and anything that moves.
I mean, they weren't even going to trade him in the first place.
Like, I just got traded to the Rangers.
They're literally
buying everything.
First place all year. I don't think they were ever going to trade him.
Imagine they get Candelario. I obviously don't need him, but that'd be pretty funny.
I don't know where you can play him because you got Young at third.
Yeah,
Young, yeah. I don't know who their shortstop is. You got Simeon at second. Like, I mean, their DH, I forget who they usually use as DH, but like, that's one of the deepest. Mitch Garver, that's one of the deepest lineups all of baseball. That might be the deepest
today.
Lineup in the AL.
They lost to the Padres today, so look at that.
They got swept by the Padres.
Yeah, the Padres already. They put themselves back in the buyer's market, so. That removes another option for Miami and Snell. Blake Snell.
The Cubs and Padres getting hot now was terrible for most of the buyers.
Oh, that was what we were saying could have happened to the buyer market. This is 100% a seller market. You're going to be overpaying. It's going to happen. That's why it was genius to get David Robinson. Wow, they did. I don't even know what that price came now.
What did you guys keep that the grade? I don't think that either. Hernandez or Vargas are going to end up on the Mets. I think I've been saying this for a while. I think they're going to end up getting traded, especially now that they got Luis Angel Acuna. That blocks like three positions for him, with Jeff McNeil there. Who knows how long Jeff McNeil's going to be there, but you know Steve Cohen gives money out to everybody, so I
figured
they're
not going to look. I love the Luis Angel. The Acuna acquiring and getting him.
That was a pretty good
farm system. That farm system is going to get a lot better this deadline if they trade who we think they'll trade. So that's all we can say.
Although they trade
Verlander
for the Astros, they probably aren't going to get much because the Astros system is horrid.
It's not that good. Yeah, I don't think it was ranked three this year. I don't think Verlander gets dealt though. Apparently, he really really likes New York. So
it's a lot of money. It's also a lot of money that he's owed.
He's also 40. Like he's old enough to be a lot of people's listening staff.
And he chooses where he goes. That's another thing too. He has that trade clause.
He probably only set the trade that the Houston. I've seen some Reds rumors. I've also heard some in Cincinnati, but I don't know.
But you live in Cincinnati, that's why.
Would you trade Marte for him?
Christian
Strand.
That's also a tough one. I think you trade Christian Arroyo because that dude's not going to be up until like 2025, and that doesn't really fit the Reds' mold. I've been saying for a while they need to trade guys like Arroyo and Cam Collier and trade some of the guys who are not going to be up that quick because Marte realistically could be on the opening day roster in 2024. So that would be a big pony up move.
He's what, third base now, since you have Elliott at short?
Here's a good thing about what the Reds have done. They've acquired so many shortstops, a.k.a. the best defensive position in the infield, and you can just play him anywhere. So he can play second. He can play third.
It's like with the Marlins playing second baseman in left field.
My guy.
Except the Reds have a bunch of really, really athletic fielders.
I'll say this. The Reds are in a great position because they have so many infielders that they could trade some for, like, you know, some really, really good starting pitching. It wouldn't shock me if they got Flaherty or one of these guys on the open market right now when it comes to the trades. Sorry, we got to get moving.
Yeah, but Romeo, you got anything else? I just saw like two requests coming at once. We got to get it going.
Nah. Is it true that Salas got sent down to FCO?
He did.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he did.
What a move by Kim. I mean, that was the Marlins number two.
Yeah.
At the time they traded him. Which one?
Three, I believe.
No, he wasn't two or three. He was like top five. But I don't
know. Well, I swear to God, he was top
five. I think he was
maybe three. Maybe Alex Marlins list.
You know what? I'll look it up myself.
What a move getting rid of him at that time and getting that trade over the finish line. Because that was quite literally the best thing they could have gotten for Pablo Lopez. So, Romeo, thank you. Got to get him to move on here. We are going to let's go with Devin. Let's go with Devin. Devin was speaking when J.J. LeDay got traded. So, any trades happen right now, thank you.
You're right. Hey, guys. I've just been looking up some names. You know, it's tough to try to predict this stuff and throw out potential trades, but I've been really looking at the Mets lately. So the Mets have Mark Vientos and Pete Alonso. You know, he's only got next year. I think that could be a good under-the-radar type of guy. He's, you know, not necessarily, like, available, but if the Marlins want to overpay, maybe that could work.
That's more than an overpay.
Well,
I think that no.
Two years. That's all he's got.
They have not made his name available. I don't believe he will get traded because the Mets are still trying to compete next year. I think Pete Alonso is a guy they would like to extend. They probably can't afford an extension. Well, no, they can't afford an extension. Steve Cohen, crying out loud. But it would take a lot. Yeah, you'd solidify first base for the next year and a half. Well, what do you do after that? I don't think the Marlins are going to extend Pete Alonso. Those interdivision trades are just so tricky. You've already given up two of your best FCL prospects. They were now getting national attention. Everyone thinks Marco Vargas is Jesus, even though our guy Alex Harper was all over that the last couple months. But it would cost a lot. It would be very, very risky. But there's no question whether Pete Alonso would help the team because he would make the team infinitely better.
Yeah.
But I don't think he has any shot.
I think the Mets end up just extending him, and with Vientos, I think he's going to be a piece that the Mets will want moving forward, so I doubt that won't happen soon.
I just want to say this morning I was a guest on the Talking Mets podcast, so we were going through the Robertson trade and the prospects, and he brought up, unprompted, he pitched the idea of Pete Alonso to the Marlins, but do you know who we wanted back for Pete Alonso?
Yuri.
Wanted Yuri. So that's not going anywhere. Yeah. I don't think there's a match there with that team, but yeah, I do suspect that he'll be extended with the Mets. They absolutely adore him there. He was recently in the midst of maybe the worst slump of his career, but he has since pounded out of that. You know, when all things considered, he's going to hit 40 home runs every single year. They're going to keep him, but they could get creative with some of the other guys on their roster. It is interesting that the Marlins and Mets have now hooked up on three different trades just in the Kim Eng era alone. And so I would expect that relationship is strong and they've done several different types of deals with each other. That old philosophy of not trading in your division, I think that's outdated at this point with the way that baseball has changed a little bit. Now that you can get into the postseason so easily as a wild card, now that you play head to head a lot less often than you used to under the old format. You should always be don't rule out any trades within the division moving forward, in my opinion.
What else we got, Devin? I'm going to have you speak as long as possible in hopes we get a trade.
I was looking at some other names. You know, you have Candelario. I was trying to think of a package to have Candelario and maybe Patrick Corbin with money, obviously. Maybe Mel.
Patrick Corbin? Some.
Yeah.
Patrick Corbin? How old is he?
He's still kicking. He's still throwing.
He's flown a little under the radar. He's actually been okay.
I mean, if 5.07 ERA is okay, then jeez.
He's had some decent starts. He's gotten blown up a lot. Yeah, his blow-up percentage is probably the worst in the league. He gets – when it rains, it pours. But yeah. I'm just trying to look at more.
I do like options. Candelario. I really like Candelario. If they were still looking for relievers, I really like the name Kyle Finnegan. I know he's been a name that's been brought up a couple times. He's been pretty good for the most part.
I knew you really wanted.
I did really want Kyle Finnegan last year, yeah. And this year, I know I was going to bring him up, but he was like, nah. There were better names out there, obviously. So, and then I guess if you're looking at starters, not much. Most of them are under control for this team, but
I gotta be honest. With Cueto coming back and pitching like he has, and you're gonna have Yuri back for September, and you've got—I
know what's happening here.
Do you really need to go for another starter?
Yeah.
Yes.
100%.
Okay, fine. I will shut up. Okay, I get it.
Cueto will not sustain us. Hopefully, he will though.
What if one of them gets hurt? Like Edward Cabrera is.
I totally hear you.
You got Braxton and Lizardo. Their career highs. But yeah, like we've lectured you enough. We'll spare you. But one thing that's
I get enough lecturing in the chat.
It is what it is. There was one name. They did get brought up in our little comments section here. If you go down to the bottom right with the comments, see kind of what people are saying. I can't get to everyone at the same time, so I like to read through those. Lane Thomas was suggested. I like him a lot. He's having a really good year, but he comes with some control. And with how clogged the Marlins corner outfield spots are, especially with Abby coming back now, it gets really, really tough. But I really like Lane Thomas. He would make this team a lot better, but I don't see a path to get him. At least
I really want to see a trade.
As do I. Even in just an MLB trade. I don't care. Let me just get some sort of trade during these spaces so we can just react. I think of maybe doing it in the spaces Tuesday. Maybe even do one tomorrow. I don't know. We'll see. But, Devin, is that all you've got? We've got some requests piled up now.
I did want to mention, you know, we talk about trades and acquiring. You know, what happens with the guys that you have? If you acquire an outfielder, what happens to Sanchez and, DLC when Jazz comes back? And the same thing with the infield. You know, you get a third baseman, first baseman. Who's going to take Cooper? You know, like, what's actually going to happen with those guys?
Yeah, that's something I've been thinking about too, Devin. When it comes to specifically to Cooper, because obviously he's shown his inconsistencies in terms of playing time, and Yuli's been good. You have Troy Johnson in AAA. Obviously, those aren't names that you would say, I want them over Cooper, but, you know, Cooper is on a one-year deal. The likeliness of him returning is low. I don't think he will come back, to be honest with you. And trading him now would make a lot of sense, that, you know, especially since Miami was in on Carlos Santana. We still haven't mentioned that too much. The fact that they were in on Santana means that they were looking at first baseman on that market. And I know that is something Joe mentioned on the Fish Unfiltered, which I highly suggest you all to watch or listen, however you get your Fish on First content. So that's something else that really needs to be mentioned, that the fact that they are looking at first baseman. They don't feel comfortable with the Cooper Yuli scenarios that they have unless – as Eli, I believe, mentioned on the last basis, that they're going to fulfill what was said early on when they brought in Yuli, that they were going to put him at second, the third, and they were going to try him out at different positions, which I personally disagree with that happening. But in that case, you would have Cooper and said first baseman on the roster. If you decide to keep Cooper, if you trade him, I mean, that would be pretty nice. I would think you would get a pretty decent package of prospects kind of to help your system. Obviously, in the buyer's market, the terms for Miami, who's buying, you wouldn't want to do that, but I don't think the trade could have
been. And additionally, there's that new rumor today from Randy Miller at NJ Advanced Media that the Marlins, like, validating the rumor about Gleyber Torres, and that the plan that the Marlins want is they want Gleyber Torres to be their second baseman, and they're ready to move Arise to first base, which, again, would signal that Cooper is likely the odd man out of the roster, if they were to make that move. They're not going to carry Cooper and Gurriel if Arise is going to be the primary first baseman there. So that trade seems like somewhat of a long shot, because it's contingent on the Yankees making a separate move. Their offense is just as much a concern as the Marlins is. So it's kind of contingent on them acquiring a bat at a different position, probably in their outfields, to like move things around and make that sensible. So it's still a long shot, I would say, to happen at the deadline. It just is further in that line of thinking that they are not satisfied with first base, and they shouldn't be, because these guys, the Cooper and Gurriel combination, it's, you know, it's been passable, but it's still below average. You need a lot of offense at first base to keep up with these other teams around the league. And with Gurriel, he doesn't slug. And with Cooper, he's doing a decent number slugging this year, but he's not getting on base. He's just like a 300 OBP and a lot of non-productive outs too when he's not getting on base. His strikeout rate is through the roof, especially recently with Cooper. You know, today's home run aside on a hanging breaking ball, I mean, that was, it was a huge moment for him. And if I was to bet, I would think that they're going to end up adding a bat at a different position, not first base, and that Cooper is going to still be here. But it is like, it's a very valid possibility that he could be moved. And I disagree with what Kevin said, that they would get a decent thing in return. I don't think they get much of anything in return for Cooper if they trade him right now. He's not good. He's not a good overall player this year, especially not recently. He's been a league average hitter overall, which is well below average for first base. He doesn't run, he doesn't play defense, and he doesn't stay on the field, and he's a pending free agent. They would get perhaps one, they would take a flyer on like a lottery ticket prospect, and they would save the money left on his salary. But his value is not where it was last year. When last year they were, had conversations about trading him, I remember the Astros being a candidate. They'd at least listened on Cooper at this time a year ago when he was a better player and when he still had an extra year of control to go. So with him, I think they would be ready to simply cut their losses if they feel that they can make a really tangible upgrade to that infield, either by directly acquiring a first baseman or by acquiring somebody that moves Arise into first base.
I mean, Leila, I think of it like this. This is a seller's market, as we mentioned, and if you trade Coop, they would get something. I know he hasn't been that good, but there's times where he's looked really good this year. And I think that team would take a flyer on Cooper, and they would kind of fix him up. Obviously, I think they would get a decent package. I don't think it'll be anything, you know, blockbuster type, but they would get something good. I don't think it'll be a flyer type prospect, like you said. But, you know, we have different opinions.
Yeah, I'm just looking around the league, and which of these buyers needs first baseman? Which, none of these buyers are going to play him every day at first base, that's for sure. But I guess if you're really digging down on it, maybe a team like the Twins would use him a lot at first base. They just had Alex Kirilloff go on the IL, and they've kind of had a rotating cast at first base. But you really have to like read. It's hard to find a fit that would actually use him a lot as anything close to an everyday player. And again, a pending free agent, you know, even if it is a seller's market, that's one position. First base is not first base DH. Those guys are not in as much demand as actual starting pitchers are. So he would be I guess the only comp is Carlos Santana, because we just saw Santana move to the Brewers, but Santana's better this year. He's a better defender, and he's getting a better overall hitter. He's just a better player, and he's in the same situation as the pending free agent. So yeah, you'd look at the Santana deal and then lower your expectations for what the return would be based on that.
I think if they do trade Cooper.
All good, guys. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, you're good, man. Hey, we'll get to more of that talk with other guys here. We got more speakers. We're going to bring in Sharif, who just recently become a super subscriber, Eli, for me. So thank you for your generous donation. Sharif, how are we doing tonight? What's your question?
Hey, guys. Good evening, everyone. Appreciate the invite. First of all, I thank you guys for continuing to do a fantastic job keeping up with everything from the minors straight up to the majors, the injuries, the progress of this team. Thank you very much to all of you. Tonight, my first question is Chichi Gonzalez. I know Anthony Bender, our Bender, is coming back later in the season. When is Chichi coming back?
Never. No offense.
I think you might be mixing up Chichi with somebody else. Chichi Gonzalez is just that that AAA starter who's not even pitching particularly well in Jacksonville.
Okay. Okay, because I saw him on the 40-man, and I saw him on the DL. So I was wondering, we're talking about, like, Puck struggling, and he's now moved down to at least the 6th or the 7th in terms of the depth relief.
Right.
And so I know Bender is really up there at 97 in fastball, but I've really never heard of, like, or seen Chichi. But thank you for letting me know that.
What I'll say quickly is other relievers that are on the way back is Andrew Nardi is all about to come back in the next couple of days. And then also Tommy Nance is the one that's been on the IL all year. And he showed some flashes in the bullpen late last season. He's finally progressing and on a rehab assignment. I don't know if there's room for him on the big league roster. I don't know if there's a role for Tommy Nance, but he's a guy that would be ready to pitch in the next couple of weeks if they feel that he's actually an improvement over what they have.
That may be who you're talking about, by the way, Sherry. Tommy Nance.
Yeah, I saw him on the IL as well. Yeah, and I know he was scheduled to come back. Now, I don't really have any trade ideas, but I do think, I'm thinking from, a perspective more of Cam Hank, in that if you get Jazz back and you get Avi to play his way into the management liking him, you know, I think that bodes well, because I think Jazz is going to come back and continue to be hot. That may, Jazz alone may add 1.5 runs to this Marlins team in terms of betting and advanced stats. But also, if Garcia can stay hot, I think we can be able to even move Cooper after the trade, after the deadline. I don't think Cooper has a place here anymore, and I don't think we're going to fool around with using Jesus at first base, but I think Jesus will luckily last because we got rights to him next year. Also, because I'm thinking, Kim is thinking that the hitters we desire is coming back to us that we already have, as opposed to trading for one. I would like Candelario. I would also like to look at maybe the guy from Goldschmidt, or even their third baseman, St. Louis's third baseman. But realistically, if we're getting back Jazz and Avisail stays hot, then all we need is the bullpen. We can tuck Puck away until he proves himself again. And like you said, you have Lance coming back. You have Nardi coming back. Already you can see that I forgot the guy who now pitches the eighth inning for us, the lefty. He's looking good. Obviously Roberts, veteran guy thing. I like him in the closer position. And Jorge, I think he pitched well in his debut tonight. But yeah, so there's a lot to look forward to in terms of the hitters that we desire to help this team coming back. Are your thoughts on that?
Anyone there? All right, I guess I'll take it. I mean, it's particularly with Nance, I guess. I just don't think he's that good. But the Marlins do have some good internal options. And like you said, I mean, they can tread water with the guys they've got. But at the end of the day, I think it's just treading water. But Alex Carver's got his hands up. He's got it.
Oh, I was going to ask a separate question and let you finish your thought. So go ahead. Go ahead, Grant.
I mean, that's kind of my thought. I mean, you can hype up the guys on the roster all you want, but at the same time, it's a very, very flawed roster. So the answer's not on the roster really with anything right now, whether it be the bullpen, the rotation, or the lineup. The Marlins have to make moves the next 2 days. It's kind of making me a little pissed off when people are saying, well, if you get Jazz back and you get Abby playing good, it's like getting two new acquisitions. I mean, not really. The guys were already on the roster, they haven't been playing that good. Like, they would just be playing up to their potential. And even then, I still don't think this is a playoff team. The Marlins have to go make moves in the next couple of days if they want to make the playoffs. This team in its current state, even if you get Jazz back, and even if you throw Yuri in there, I still don't think they make the playoffs is what lies ahead. The Marlins haven't been good against teams over 500 this year. And nothing will change if the Marlins don't make any moves.
Yeah, you have to be, as exciting as it is, I suppose, to have these injured players all getting healthy at the same time, what's stopping somebody else from getting injured in August and September? Even though it feels like a well-rounded team at this exact moment, more injuries are inevitable. That's just the reality of it. And when they don't happen for a period of time, that's a good problem to have, but that's where minor league options come into play. That's when you get really creative. Realistically, you have to anticipate that. You have to be prepared for the likelihood that there are going to be more injuries that hurt your depth at different positions. And that's why when teams are really determined to make the playoffs, they add more than 26 good major leaguers on their roster at the same time, because they anticipate that some of those guys are not all going to be available at the exact same time. And I would say, to answer your question, even though at this moment, I'd say the outfield is in decent shape, or you could be hopeful about the outfield looking with the pieces they already have. The infield is still just not good enough. They still have to be creative and aggressive there. And if they can find an above average infielder, whether it is at third or at first or at second, that moves a rise to first base, any infielder, even, and of course at shortstop as well, if one of those magically comes available, they need to be turning over every rock they can in the infields, and then make adjustments from there. Because that they're just not getting enough offense from those positions right now.
All right, real quick, let me moderate this. Shreve's had his hands up. Let him finish his thought. Alex Carver said he's got a question before we bring in the next person. I'll let Alex get his question. So, Shreve, what else you got?
Yeah, I agree. But nothing is stopping, like, Jorge Soler from learning how to stay away, you know, from that inside pitch below his knees. I think if he can start to come around, I think it would be imperative then if you stick Jazz at the third spot for them to actually pitch to Soler, because I think that's what was happening when we were hot with Jazz. They had to pitch to Soler because Lewis started walking more, and that's important to for Arias to walk if he's not getting something that he can hit. I think when Jazz got hurt, he started to try and hit everything that, you know, and he could have taken more walks. But you're going to have to pitch to Soler because Jazz is there. And then if Abisil is going to, you know, be hitting the ball all over the yard, I'd stick him there in four. And I'd easily put De La Cruz at five. But my thing is that's never going to happen because they're never healthy together. So, yeah. Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, Alex. He's definitely going to ask a question to Eli and Kevin. We'll let that happen. Then we got a lot of requests. We got to work a little efficiently here. But Alex, go ahead.
Well, if you have a ton of requests, now I feel bad. Damn it, Grant. Why you got to make me feel bad like that, bro?
I mean, it's save the fish, man. It's save the fish. Our numbers are going up every week. That's thanks to you guys. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, I'll be brief because I know we want to bring in the people. It's not about us. It's about you guys. So, again, thank you guys for the support. But I want to ask Eli something really quick. Eli printed something yesterday after Jake Eater's start. Maybe you guys already covered this. I don't know. But Eli printed something, I think this morning on Fish On First, about Jake Eater and his start last night, where he did really well in terms of the stats. I think in like 5.2 innings with 10 strikeouts, he looked really good. I think this was, in my opinion, his best start since he's been back from injury. But I don't think Eli was that impressed. So, Eli, I mean, man, he was up to 95. He looked pretty good to me. You printed something today that you don't think this was as dominant as he can be. I would tend to agree with you. I think this guy could be even a little bit better than this. But I thought that was a damn good start from him last night to showcase himself to scouts that may have been in the building in Pensacola. But, man, what do you got? Expand on that, please. I'd like to hear it. Or maybe he's not there.
You intimidated him, bro. You intimidated him.
He's shook.
that you are.
He's probably walking a dog or something. It's okay. I can ask later. It's okay.
Just go ahead and ask privately. I'm sure we'll
get he's not there. It's okay. I know you need to get on to people that want to ask questions, the fans that want to ask questions.
So, we'll get LMF in here who is a super subscriber. I'll have to connect him now. I hate the awkward moment when someone's connecting and we don't have like an active discussion.
There he is.
All right, LMF, how are we tonight? What's your question, man?
All right, doing all right. Last night, it was mentioned in a fantasy trade, Jordan Walker for Yuri Perez. I put a poll up, poll just closed, at 196 votes. 92% of the voters say that you keep Yuri and you don't trade for Jordan Walker. Just wanted to point that out. I do have a question, though. This is Carver joined, so this is more on his level, I guess. September 1st, if the roster is as it is today and Yuri's up already, which two players fill the 28-man roster at that time?
Well, I'll go ahead. Kevin, I know we'll probably share the same sentiment. Troy Johnston is definitely one that has to be up. 100%, no question in my mind. Troy Johnston is a guy that needs to be on the big league team as soon as possible. So that's one. Kevin, you want to give the other one? I'll let you go ahead on this.
Another one. I've only thought of Troy Johnston, bro. Do you have another name? I'll let you go for the next one, and we'll probably agree on that one, too.
I mean, if he's still here, you could go Monteverde. I would definitely say he would be as well. But then, as LMF said, if Yuri's back, then where do you put him? Are there multiple spots in the rotation? I would tread on the. Well, it depends what happens at the deadline. But even right now,
Unless you want to bring him another reliever, that would be Sean Reynolds.
Well, that's pretty good. I've got a suggestion since Eli's not there that he would enjoy. Sean Reynolds.
Absolutely. He's already on the 40-man, too, I think, still, right?
Troy Johnston would be pretty easy. I will say this. Troy Johnston is a must. If that guy's not up when the rosters expand, there's an issue. But the other name I want to bring up, and unlikely, but Will Banfield. That's someone who I would love to see up in the big leagues very soon. Very good arm, very good defensively, very good bat this season. Someone I would really like to see.
My only reservation with Banfield would be something like, how do you get him into games with Fortes and Stallings?
That's true.
My reservation. But yeah, Edwards is a good one. Johnston is the obvious one for sure. And then I would say Reynolds definitely deserves it, and he's on the 40-man, so there's ease of access there, right? So there's a few guys you can point to in AAA, some in AA, Monteverde if he's still here for sure. So there's a few guys pushing their way that could earn that call.
Sure. Go ahead.
Well, I'm not a fan of this question, to be frank with you, but one thing I would point out, to me, a pretty obvious player that if you had expanded rosters, I would call up Austin Allen, because you get no power, you get no run production whatsoever from your catchers all year long. If you have an extra roster spot, then you give it to a guy that has the potential to hit a 3-run home run. And that can catch, you know, once you bring him into the game in the later innings, if you need to. That's often, not always, but that's frequently a way that teams go with extra roster spots, is they bring up a third catcher. And with this Marlins team, like, it's even more obvious because their catchers can't hit. We're deep into this year, and you kind of need to accept that. So it's either would be somebody like him, or, you know, Troy is somebody who has done everything possible in the minors to show that he can hit as well, but even him, his raw power is not quite the same as Austin Allen's is. He's a hit over power guy, which is funny because he actually, those two are, I think, right around tied for the minor league lead for the Marlins and homers this year. I could go a few different directions, but I think this is a good question for August 2nd after the deadline happens, because the question is, who do they send back in these trades to acquire the final reinforcements that we think they are going to? Maybe they do send back some players that are on their 40-man roster, even if it's not the active roster, maybe the 40-man. So this is a good question for the next spaces, in my opinion.
Yeah, Agreed. Yeah, I mean, right now it all comes down to who's still here after the deadline, honestly, Chase. But I don't think it's a terrible question. I think there's definitely guys that are pushing their way. Troy would be the main one. And then, of course, you look at the pitchers as well, like Patrick and, you know, it's and Sean, right, who came up and then didn't get the pitch. So you want to see that guy pitch at some point. So about an hour or so. So, yeah, you want to see that guy in a game. So, yeah. I agree, though. I think it's a question for probably next phases. But not a terrible question, because I do think there are guys that are pushing their way right now that need to be considered.
Well, I do want to ask Carver before you go, LMF. Who's the best catching prospect in this organization now? I think consensusly we all thought it was Ronald, and now he's gone. So,
it's tough. I mean,
is it Banfield?
I would probably still lean on the. Jeez, it's a really good, because it was Ronald Hernandez. You're right. I don't know. It's a really, really interesting question. If you pin me down to it, I would probably say overall, maybe it's Joe Mack. I don't know.
I think it's Banfield.
Isn't Joe Mack like the fifth ranked prospect on MLB Pipeline on the board right now?
Yeah.
Please don't look at MLB
Pipeline. But again, yeah, Pipeline loves high school.
I'm just saying, high school players. So it's a testament. Someone looks at him highly. I can't name another catcher that is that far up there, even in the conversation to be.
Yeah, it's either Banfield or Mack. I mean, I love Paul McIntosh, and I love Will Banfield. I love Paul McIntosh. I really do. Austin Allen is an older guy. Yes, he can hit for power.
He's not even a prospect, right?
He's not even – because he had time in the major, so he's not even really a prospect, so you're right. But still, he's past prospect eligibility. So if you want to put it to best prospect catcher, I would say it's Joe Mack. But Will Banfield is right there, so there's two high school catchers for you. That would be my answer.
Unless we go
down.
Any other
questions?
Does 86 wins get a team that final wild card spot?
Hard maybe. 2 weeks ago, I would have said yes. It is so jumbled up now that I'm a definite maybe. It's tough to tell. There's so much that has to play out. But at the season end of the day, I would say 86 wins. There's probably like three teams that would have it or be right around that, like two would get in when we get left out.
That's what the Phillies had last year, right? For the wild card?
I believe that's what
I think they had 87.
Okay, well, close enough.
Either way.
Yeah.
One of the 86 wins.
I'm with Grant. That's a hard maybe because this is so close. It may come down to like one of the last days of the season, so that's how I'll put it.
By the way, I do want to – I have an update on Austin Allen. He hurt his right hand or wrist on Thursday, and he left the game early, and he has not played since. So that's
– when was that?
That was on Thursday. In the first inning on Thursday, I'm watching it right now, a foul ball that hit his bare hand, his bare right hand, his throwing hand. And he has not played since, so we will see. He's not on. I don't think he's on the IL down there, but it's a question as to exactly how serious that hand injury is.
Oof. Yeah, I haven't gotten the email that he's on the IL. So
is it PMAC taking the most of the reps? You know,
PMAC has started two games, and then today was Santiago Chavez.
Yeah, it would be down to PMAC to be like the overall starter, and then Chavez is the backup. So, man, that sucks. Austin Allen can definitely hit for power, but if he has a hand injury, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. That's okay.
Right, any other questions?
Thank you guys for having me on. It's a big series coming up. We definitely need to split in order for the chance to hold on to the tiebreaker. So win two here, win one in Philly in September, and if we tie them, we make the playoffs and they don't. So I hope people show up and show out. Let's go Marlins and go super subscribe for $3 right now. Have a great job today, guys. Thank you.
That's right. Definitely. Thank you, LMF. Since we're kind of going a while, I'll tell you what, we'll go hard out at 9 o'clock because we don't want to be here too late tonight. But we got some requests. I'm going to try and get to everyone. Eli's brought in Victor. So, Victor, what's your question?
I had a few questions, but I want to start off with Garcia, because, you know, he just came back today. And I think it was really encouraging that every single hit that he got was a hard hit. Like, I believe they were all over 100 miles per hour off the bat. And it seemed like he was doing the same thing in his rehab games. So do we think that I'm not saying he's going to turn into like some amazing hitter, but do we think at least it's sustainable and he can give us a similar production to what he gave tonight? Maybe not a triple every time, but maybe a few balls into the gap, you know, two hits into the gap, a single like he did today. Is that sustainable?
I think that's legit. The quality of contact has been there with him. It was there even when he's struggled. That is legit. The main issue, I would say, well, the main issue is him getting his bat on the ball in the first place. But so many of his hits as a Marlin have been straight into the ground, including his first one today, that grounded into a double play. Even though the game as a whole went pretty well for him, it got off on the wrong foot because he continued in the long line of Marlins players that hit into double plays at an almost unprecedented rate. That was last year. That was his big undoing. He was constantly rolling over on balls straight into the ground, where the hitting it hard doesn't really do you any favors in that circumstance. So with him, it's the launch angle is still going to be pretty crucial for him. And the biggest thing will simply be swinging at better pitches, because he was so undisciplined last year, swinging at everything. Even when he was hitting a ball hard, he wouldn't get it at the right angle, and it was staying in the park or it was going on the ground. And that's why he didn't tap into the kind of home run power that everybody expected of him. So I'm still kind of skeptical as to how exactly he's going to be as an overall player. There's never been any question, though, about his strength. And that's what stood out during his rehab assignment. He was hitting not just home runs, but opposite field home runs and also no doubt home runs. Yeah, his power is tantalizing. There are very few players on this whole trade market right now that have the kind of raw power that he has in terms of viewing this as that kind of addition on that same kind of level. But overall, he still has pretty fatal flaws to his game, where he's just swinging at the wrong pitches. And too often that contact, it's going into the ground and it's not really producing anything for this offense.
Speaking of today's game, really quickly, not on Abby, but speaking of today's game, if Gene Segura somehow gets MVP of this series, Eli, I think I should get like 100 points in the MVP standings because I did pick him. So, yeah, that's my campaign for myself. So, like if that guy somehow gets MVP, I should get like 100 points.
It was Miggy Cabrera.
Now, would it have been Garrett Hampson if someone picked him, or was it firmly Miguel Cabrera?
That's a good question. I'll have to double check. But naturally, nobody picked Hampson. They weren't sure he was going to even be on the roster today. Actually, yes, it would have been. I believe it would have been Hampson if anybody had actually picked him.
All right, Victor, any other questions?
My only question would be regarding the trade deadline and more specifically towards Gleyber Torres, because at least from what I was reading and what I was seeing, is that the Yankees wanted Cabrera and Garrett and maybe a few extra pieces, you know, like prospects. But, to me, that seems like an unrealistic offer, you know, like asking for that much. I don't think the Marlins are going to do it. But does that worry anyone if a team like the Yankees are asking for that much? Maybe if you go over to the Nats and you're like, I want Candelario, the Nats are going to be like, I want similar. You know, they're going to be asking for a similar package. Does that worry anyone?
Well, it's a question.
The Yankees. All right, go ahead, Graham.
All right, yeah, I'll make this point as quick as I can. And then, Eli, don't take offense because I know you were a Yankees guy. But the Yankees in their front office, Cashman front office, is kind of delusional, a little bit. A lot of it, actually, where they spent years offering Clint Frazier as the headliner in all these different packages, but now they want two top prospects for the Marlins and two rotation arms. Like, that is just so hypocritical. I don't think the price for
a lot of these other guys is going to be anywhere near what the Yankees are asking for Torres. That was probably a starting offer, sure, and the Marlins could always negotiate that down, but like, I don't expect a guy like Candelario being nearly that expensive at all. I mean, sure, he's going to have an inflated price because this is a crazy seller's market we've seen in recent history at the deadline, but no one's trading that kind of package for Torres, and if a team does that for Gleyber Torres, they aren't going to make the playoffs. I'm sorry.
And then the one thing I do want to add to what Grant said is with Washington, I don't think they're looking for major leaguers. They're looking for prospects that are going to help their system, especially with where they're at right now, especially like upper-level prospects where they, I think, should really be targeting. Obviously, the Mets were another situation. And the Yankees, as Grant said, I have no idea how they pulled that offer out of their ass to really say, here, we want Eddie, we want Brax, and we want two top prospects. And man, that was, I think Miami should have just hung up the phone right there and no longer be talking to the Yankees. But I mean, obviously, as Brian said, you could kind of tone it down a little bit, negotiate it down. I think they'll find a way to get a deal done. If Miami's pushing as hard as it is rumored that they are for Gleyber Torres, they will definitely either overpay in some way, shape, or form, or eventually they'll get to a deal that they feel comfortable with. But I'm leaning towards the part where they overpay just because of how it's been reported that how badly they're pushing for someone like Gleyber.
Well, this is also
reporting
this. I don't know if the Marlins are actually pushing this hard. That could definitely be a New York spin.
Well,
I'm just dissing New York hard. I'm sorry, Eli.
Last year, Craig told us in the spaces that he was ready to send out the tweet. He had it written up that Gleyber was coming to Miami for Pablo. So it wouldn't surprise me if Miami is once again trying to make that push that badly for Gleyber. Which I don't know why. I like Gleyber, the player, but I don't, you know, not someone who I would really want.
He would virtually take either one of Cooper or Yuli off the roster, as we had previously mentioned.
Yes.
But
yes,
he would be a good addition to this team. It would help out the infield a little bit defensively, even though Arise has been way better than him. Stott would be at second base. But at the end of the day, I feel like, because we haven't really heard a lot of this coming from Miami, other than Alex's boy, Daniel DeVivo, being the first one to report the interest, people kind of ridiculing him, but he was indeed right. But a lot of the noise from Gleyber Torres has come out of New York. I don't know if the Marlins are actually pushing that hard. Maybe we ask Craig if that's actually happening. I don't know. But I would just take it with a grain of salt as to how hard the Marlins are pushing. I don't doubt whatsoever they've had discussions, but I also just don't know if they're actually going to overpay like what New York people are saying.
And if I am Miami, I am not trading Edward Cabrera and Braxton Garrett. I think Cabrera is an off-season thing, especially with how the pitch, you know, how much, I mean, you're looking for starting pitching. For those that think Miami should trade Edward Cabrera, I just think you're wrong, because you're looking for starting pitching. You're mentioning all these trade targets, Montgomery, Flaherty, Giolito at one point, just to say, let's trade Edward. I don't think that's the case. I think you need to keep Edward and then you figure it out in the offseason what you're going to do. And that's, I think, what's the case with De La Cruz, with Edward, and all the other names we've mentioned that could possibly be sell highs.
That's a good point. Victor, any other questions?
Yes, this will be my last question. So looking a bit ahead, you know, into the offseason and more into next year, I know a lot of people would be scared of getting any more free agencies or any more free agent players because of the way it's turned out with some of the guys we've got recently. But where would you guys look if you are this team trying to upgrade the offense into next year?
Well, I would probably look again through trades just because next year's free agent market, I guess this year's free agent market, it is piss poor. It is pretty bad. I haven't taken a deep dive into it, but I know we've talked about it. I've seen some people on Twitter talk about it, that it's a really bad free agency market, and the Marlins will have to get creative once again this offseason. That just seems to be the theme at this point, doesn't it?
Yeah. There will be some familiar names that were out there last year that the Marlins are linked to, like Evan Longoria and Justin Turner. Justin Turner has been amazing, and he's going to opt out of his player option. But both those guys are a year older and therefore carry a whole lot of risk in them. So those are players that would be available to the Marlins and I think affordable, but just the downside is pretty big when you're that deep into your 30s. Matt Chapman is one of the biggest position player names out there, but he's a guy that I think would be out of their price range. If they don't trade for Candelario, or even if they, or especially if they do, I mean, Candelario is due to be a free agent this time around. And that would be somebody that I do think they could afford, and somebody who, at least defensively at third base, would be better than their current internal options, including Segura. And offensively, you think he's a pretty big upgrade there as well, just as an overall player who's, because of the inconsistency of his career, would be somebody that's affordable. So, I would kind of, the free agent class isn't quite as bad as it was projected to be. Even guys in the outfield, like Tommy Pham, is having a better year than expected. Jock Peterson's going to be available next year. And aside from, and of course, Cody Bellinger is the one who's improved his stock so much. That'll be a really interesting one where I think he's kind of on the line between somebody that's realistically affordable and somebody that isn't. I think the main deterrent is that going to be the length of the deal that he's in play for. I think he's somebody that's going to pretty easily get 5-6 years because of the fact that he's only 28 years old heading into this offseason. No, there's some interesting guys out there. One of the big factors here is what they do with Jazz, whether they leave Jazz in center field or whether he's coming back to the infield and how to move the pieces around there, corresponding to him. There's not a whole lot of, it's an interesting group, but I do again agree with Grant that trades are going to be an important piece of this. They're just in a tough spot overall, though, because the farm system, as we've touched on, is not in good shape. So they don't even have as much trade capital this coming offseason as they had this past offseason. Unless some guys really pop at the end of this minor league season, they don't have a whole lot of trips. They'd have to get really creative in trading from their big league roster. And that's the thing that they don't really want to do now, obviously, when they're in the middle of the race. But come the offseason, they do have some creative trade options when it comes to these pitchers. You know, they do have, in the organization, they have a surplus of starting pitchers. The problem is, at this moment, they don't have a surplus of healthy starting pitchers that you can rely on for innings down the stretch. So once again, and for the foreseeable future, there's always going to be rumors about them using their pitchers to get more bats in trade. It's difficult to do here at this deadline, but that's something that's going to be on the table for sure in the offseason.
So the only other thing to mention that Eli didn't say, I would agree with the names that he mentioned as being probably some of the main guys. I mean, you can point to some other guys as well that are going to be free agents, which are kind of lower down. You got Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, you got Brandon Crawford. So you have names like that are kind of lower down. But my only other question would be, what is Jorge Soler going to do with his player option? Right. So does he accept it? Does he go somewhere else? Does he think he can get something somewhere else? That's another main factor to consider when you go into the offseason. So just keep that in mind that it is in his court. It is in Soler's court on what he wants to do. Does he want to stay here? How far do the Marlins go? I think his decision is going to be based on how far this team goes into the playoffs. If this team can prove that it's a winner and go into the playoffs at least, maybe he would come back. If this team doesn't make the playoffs, I don't know if he would accept a player option. I don't know if he would take it. So that's going to be another main thing to think about when you go to the offseason.
We've got Josh. Whitten.
Yeah, hold on.
He's been requested all spaces. So floor is yours whenever you're ready to speak.
Yeah, you guys were talking yesterday about how the Marlins would have like no chance of pulling off like a mega trade for like a Soto or something based off of their farm system. But would you see any situation where we would start a trade with Jazz in there and get out of this albatross? I know everyone in the world loves him, but I think he's severely overrated. And if there's a way to do something with that now, I think it would be an all-in type situation.
You're speaking my language.
That's a great question.
I will suggest that you go to fishonfirst.com and read my latest trade piece on could the Marlins realistically get Juan Soto. The answer could actually surprise you, but I did explore the possibility of, do you headline that package with Jazz Chisholm? It aligns very, very well with your question. I don't think you explore it right now. I don't know if you can just because of his injury situation, but the offseason, absolutely. I think you look to capitalize on his peak value because you also look at it this way. The Marlins aren't going to extend everyone at one time, especially at one time, actually, I guess that's kind of a dumb thing to say. Like, they are going to extend every young player they've got. I'd say your top two candidates right now are Arise and Lazaro, 100%. Those are your guys you're going to get.
Yuri Perez?
I don't know. Well, he's got some control. Yuri's 100% in the conversation as well. But guys who are starting to lose some control, Lazaro and Arise, you got to start talking to them as soon as possible, I believe. And Sandy's already taken care of. But those are your guys you need to talk to. What has Jazz done to earn an extension? Not a whole lot, in my opinion. So if you want to capitalize on his peak value before the entire league notices that he just can't stay healthy, I like your idea. I like where your head's at.
I mean, he's on the cover of the video game. He's going to want max money. And honestly, I think his peak, I think his star, and he wants to be in the superstars level. And I think he's just a star. He's not going to be a superstar. And I think we got to figure out a way to maximize getting out of this before, you know, before the money comes.
Let me ask you a serious question. Though, Josh, and this is a great question, by the way, so kudos to you for bringing up this name in terms of a guy that they could let go. It's not something that any Marlins fan wants to hear, but it is very realistic. I would like to think, in terms of, yes, it's a marketable player. What's he done on the field? When he's been healthy, he's been pretty good. When he's not been healthy, it's been an issue, and the health has been a sure issue for this player. So what I would say is what I would ask you is, what has this player done for Miami to show that he is a superstar? That's my main question for you.
I think I'm the wrong person to ask. I think everyone and their mom think he is the man, and I don't think he has really shown that yet. He's not shown me that he's Ronald Acuna, and he thinks he is. And he has shown that, you know, he's got some great potential, but I just don't think the ceiling's there, even if healthy. I don't think he is Acuna, and that's who he thinks he is.
The sheer reality of this situation, I agree with you, by the way, but the sheer reality of this situation is that right now, when we're talking today, the Marlins have lost this trade. They did not win this trade with Zach Gallen. They lost this trade for Zach Gallen. And we've said that a lot about Marlins trades for promising players in the past. And here it is again. We're saying it again, that the Marlins have definitely lost this trade. Can they get it back? It's possible, because Jazz definitely does have the ability. But now you have him in center field. He's at a much more demanding position. And he's still getting hurt. And that is a true problem. It really is that the Marlins put this guy in center field thinking that he could do it. The Marlins also continue to run this guy out, you know, after last year in spring training when he was apparently hurt at second base, and then he got hurt and missed the entire second half. There is a true worry here about this player's longevity, about this player's ability to stick over the course of a full season, and it's very worrisome. So you're right. I would not say that Jazz Chisholm, even though he's injured, I would not say, especially if you can get it back, you know, a superstar like Grant has said in Soto. I don't think it's realistic, but Grant said it's more realistic than you think in his article, and he made good points. But man, it's going to be interesting to see what the future holds for this player, because man, yes, he has a great personality. He's on the cover of a video game, like you said. All of that other stuff, he's very marketable, like you said. So he does a lot of stuff behind the scenes, but on the field, it's been a letdown, bro. So I don't know how you can say that this has been anything but a loss in this trade with Zach Gallen so far.
All right, we'll keep up the good work. Thanks.
Hey, we appreciate it, man. That was a very good question. We will bring in this gentleman right here who's got an Island Emoji as his name. It's Mr. Island Emoji's loading in. I'm going to mute Isaac. Dude's in the middle of a tunnel, it seems.
Bro, he's always in his car.
Sorry, guys. Well done, Carver. I agree with everything you just said. I've never agreed with you more on a certain topic than I did just now. He said it perfectly.
And look, I love Jazz Chisholm. He's remarkable. He's what the Marlins needed at a pretty rough time in terms of image, I guess, whereas they traded all their stars and didn't really have anyone to represent the face of the team. And definitely appreciate what he's done there, but he hasn't shown that he's been healthy. And from a business perspective, it 100% makes sense to explore what his value could be in the offseason. If you haven't read my article on fishonfirst.com, where I suggest is that, you know, maybe you headline him for Juan Soto, go ahead and read it. We brought up some fabulous points. There's a name in there that you guys are probably going to be mad that I mentioned. He might be a certain Jeezy Sanchez, but go read the article. We really scored the opportunity.
What does that say, Grant? I mean, yes, and I know that Josh, this is the last I'll say because I know you got to get to another speaker, but this is the last I'll say. What does that say about the fact that we're getting more upset about trading Jesus Sanchez than it does about maybe including Josh in a trade
company? The best ability is availability. Has Josh Chisholm been available? No.
Exactly.
That's the last I'll say on it. So,
there you go.
So we got our new speaker in here. What's your question, my man? If he's there. There we go.
So my question is regarding the bullpen situation. We've seen Puck struggle. I mean, it's looking like the seventh or eighth outing where he's just looked terrible. And I'm wondering if Skip is just going to take him out of the rotation of the bullpen. And once Nardi comes back, it'll be something like Nardi, Scott, you know, Jorge Lopez and Robertson. Because, I mean, if this guy just gives up a run, it's a guarantee every single time that he comes out on the mound and he gives up a run. And I just wanted your guys' thoughts about that.
That is what I'd encourage them to do. It usually never works like this. It's usually the guy that is the closer. They don't do anything drastic at any point. They continue to try to put him in a position to regain his old role as soon as possible. But with Puck, this is such an extended struggle and losing games in so many different ways. To me, it is pretty apparent that he's the weakest link in this bullpen and should be used as such until he has some measure of success before even thinking about putting him back in those situations. And that's why today was a head scratcher. Today, putting him in a relatively important situation with a one run lead facing kind of the middle of the Tigers lineup, it's just baffling because you can kind of see what is happening. It's somebody that is severely struggling. It's not just luck, and it's not just one particular thing or one particular pitch or a particular matchup. He's not finishing his pitches the same way, and he's not inducing the soft contact or the swings and misses that he used to. He just can't be trusted whatsoever. But their bullpen, I think, is they can now, if they choose to, they can now bury him in that mop-up situation if they want to. Now that Nardi is coming back and now that Robertson and Lopez are in the mix, I have no clue if they would actually do it. I still think that they hold out hope that they can make one little tweak and get Puck back on board. But it's really hard to overstate how bad he has been for now several weeks now. Not just struggling, but struggling in these most important situations in a way that has made him arguably the least valuable pitcher in baseball. He has turned several wins into losses, and he has put several possible wins in jeopardy like he did today, even though they ultimately prevailed thanks to the rest of the supporting cast. Yeah, it's turned really ugly for him, unfortunately. I mean, the silver lining is they still have him around beyond this year. So even if he doesn't get it back down the stretch, even if they, by the end of this year, he doesn't figure it out, they do have time to get the best out of him in the future, because it's really not that long ago where he was super effective. But this is a really unusual case. I just want to hammer that home. This is unusual for somebody to be as good as he was for several months and then go entirely the other way around for an entire month right after that. So it's fascinating. And unfortunately, it's a big challenge for this team. So thankfully they were out in front of that issue instead of waiting all the way down to the deadline.
Appreciate it. I mean, I got one more question surrounding Jack Flaherty. I know he's a free agent after this year, so I'm wondering what kind of package would look like, you know, to get somebody like that, considering he's a free agent after the year.
That's a good question. I really don't know what the pitcher market looks like. What was the return on Montgomery? I did not see what the return was.
Well, with him, they did bundle him with a reliever, Chris Stratton, in order to maximize him a little more. And I think that's what they would do with Flaherty, too. As I mentioned earlier in the space, is bundling him with one of the hitters that the Cardinals have, like a Paul DeJong, who can give them a little bit more offense in the infield, that would make me more comfortable actually giving up one of the Marlins' better prospects in return for somebody like Flaherty. So I think that's what they're trying to do. The Cardinals, they got three players in return and two of them being prospects. Two that were relatively well-regarded prospects, but nobody from the very top of their farm. And then they got a separate left-hander pitching, John King. Not really familiar with John King. He's been a pretty mediocre guy over the course of his career with them. So yeah, they got a decent return. Like, yeah, it's a realistic target. But for this Marlins team, they've already made that one deal, getting a pure rental in Robertson while giving up two decent prospects in return. I think they want to, any other pending free agents, I think they want to bundle them with an additional piece in order to make it more worth their while. They just don't have a whole lot of prospects to trade with in the first place. So they don't want to, even though it's important for them to win this year, it's more defensible to push their chips in if they're actually like killing two birds with one stone. I guess it applies to the Cardinals. If they get a couple of Cardinals players in one, somebody else along with Flaherty, then I think that makes you more comfortable. In terms of like particular names, the same guys that have been brought up in rumors already, like Carson Milbrandt and Jacob Miller, their early round draft picks from last year on the pitching side, who are now a little bit redundant in this farm system. Patrick Monteverde, we've brought him up before as well. And now that he's at AAA, you wouldn't put him in your rotation right away, but as soon as next year, that's somebody that I imagine would have a lot of appeal to the Cardinals. Yeah, at this point, they've traded a couple of their only good hitting prospects. So whatever it is, you would expect it to be very pitcher-centric.
Eli, just because I'm sure you know, sorry to interrupt, just because you know, I'm sure the arm that St. Louis acquired better than the rest of us, what would those...
You cut out, Isaac.
The Cardinals are for that player. Wait, what? Say that again, Isaac. You cut out for a second. The arms that the Cardinals acquired for Hicks, like, what would you comp that to Miami?
What would you comp it to Miami?
The Cardinals.
That's what he's asking.
Well, now I got to look at the Hicks trade. We weren't even talking about that trade. We were talking about the Montgomery Chris Stratton trade. But now looking at the Hicks one.
He would have been someone to package along with Flaherty. So that's why I'm just curious what Hicks was worth on the trade market.
I don't know very much about these particular guys. Oh, I think they've already been. Yeah, it's going to be hard for me. I don't have an answer off the top of my head on that.
The thing that I can say is, how good is this Rangers team going to be? Jeez.
Like Rangers, Braves, World Series, calling it now.
Yeah, they get Scherzer and now they get Jordan Montgomery? Like, what? Like, I was so sad to see Montgomery go today. That was a name that I really thought the Marlins had a chance at. It's not happening. He's on the Texas Rangers, and that team is really going to be good. So, man, if you look at a second-half favorite for a World Series, at least berth, if not championship, Texas Rangers. It has to be them.
Yeah.
All right, any other questions? Cool. That's all I got. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you. All right, executive decisions, since we're coming on 2 hours here. We did a 2.5-hour space just a couple weeks ago. Wasn't fun. If you got a request, I apologize. We do this every single Sunday. We're going to get Ryan because he is my man. He's a super subscriber. And a quick congratulations to him. He caught a little bit of the Clearwater Threshers game the other night. What an honor that is. I haven't called minor league baseball. A very, very cool experience there. What's your question? We'll end the night with you. We'll wrap up.
Yeah, thanks, guys. So I was wondering when Nardi comes back. I don't know if you guys have been asked this yet because I just joined. I was watching the Sunday night baseball game with my dad. But when Nardi comes back, who's going to get sent down in you guys' opinion?
Probably Brazoban.
Yes, that is my guess as well. It's Brazoban or Soriano, but Soriano has been so good, even though he's been used. Even though Soriano's been used more recently, it's beginning to look really legit in his case. So it's almost definitely going to be one of those two. Yeah, thankfully with Tanner Scott, they avoided an injury scare because we were worried that maybe he would go back on the IL with his calf thing, but he proved today that he's fully healthy. So yeah, it's Brazoban or it's Soriano. I could see you going either way, but my hope would be Brazoban because I feel like Soriano has really earned his spot.
I have an idea that might be frowned upon. It might not be ethical, but Ghost IL stint for Puck.
It can't be. Maybe it's Ghost IL stint, but it can't be Soriano, who provides multiple innings, who saved a couple of games here already. It can't be Soriano. It has to be Oscar Brazoban, who cannot go multiple innings. So, I think the easy decision is Brazoban.
I've had an idea up at the top. Maybe?
I was about to say, I was going to mention the Phantom IL for Puck. I mentioned that to a couple people earlier today when he was struggling. And the other idea I had was JT Chagois. He has just not been able to get the ground balls or get left-handed batters out at any stretch. And, you know, his whole thing is getting ground balls. And when he's not getting them, he's basically Junichi Tazawa at this point. So I think they have to consider either Puck or Chagois as someone they sent down. Oakrit's been doing fine. The rest of the pen has been doing fine. Brazoban has even been doing fine. And obviously, I'm not going to send out Soriano. I agree with Carver and you guys. But I think you have to consider either Chagois or Puck. You have to.
Yeah, you have to go IL or
Brazoban. I hate to burst your bubble, but Chagois is out of options. You can't send him down. That's the reason why he was traded to the Marlins in the first place, because the Rays like their optional relievers. You can't send him down. He's out of options. Oakert, for the record, has been out of options for a couple of years now. But Chagua's out of options. And unfortunately, I could just read you through his last five appearances. There's last five appearances. One, he allowed two inherited runners to score. Then the other one, he pitched a scoreless inning but walked a guy. And then the last three, he's given up earned runs in all three of those on his own, and including a couple of those where he allowed inherited runs to score in addition to his own earned runs. So he has been, ever since he came back from that injury, he has not been quite as sharp. And especially recently, this is maybe his worst extended slump of some kind that he's had this year. Unfortunately, you can't send him down. So that would be a pretty bold decision. If he does struggle, this continues for another couple of weeks. Like, they could make the bold choice to just DFA him, honestly. But they can't send him down. And I don't think they're going to do that DFA right now. I think it's, for the moment, you keep as much pitching depth as possible. And you do that by simply optioning one of those guys that actually can be sent down.
Yeah. Ryan, what else we got? I know you got another one, I'm sure.
So I was wondering, this is more for Alex Carver, but other people can answer this too. It's about the minors. Who's been the best catcher in the minor league organization so far this year?
It would have been Ronald.
Ron Hernandez. But he's not here anymore. Kevin can answer. Kevin, I took this last time. I'll let you take it this time. I know this has been kind of asked already. Go ahead.
We have a trade. The Angels are getting Randall Grichuk and CJ Krohn from the Rockies. So if anyone cares about
that. I'm refreshing my timeline.
Mark Feinstein. The Angels are Colorado's getting Jake Madden and Mason Albright.
But to answer your question,
the Angels just made a trade. Sorry to cut you off. I don't know if that's even worth it.
That was literally what we were talking about.
Oh, my bad.
Daniel, you had to calm this down.
Breathe.
Dude, Judge just re-signed with the Yankees, Daniel.
To the Giants? Giants?
I think Chapman may have just gone to the Marlins. No, I'm just kidding.
Go ahead. Not tonight, man.
All right, but to answer your question, Ryan, it would have been Ronald Hernandez, but right now, personally, I would say it's Will Banfield, just the way he's been playing this season. I would say he's relying a little more on the power than the bat, but, man, he's so good defensively. He's been playing very well for the most part. I think, and also, I just want to clarify, it doesn't say much, given how bad the catching, depth is in this organization. But if there was one guy to mention, it would be Will Banfield. And then there's Austin Allen, who's also been pretty good for Miami and for Triple A Jacksonville. But what Eli said is that he's injured now with some type of wrist injury, it looked like. So we'll see if they put him on the IL, but he's putting up the highest WRC plus out of any catcher in the minor league system.
I want to dive into kind of the DSL guys and FCL guys. I know they brought in some there, so I'll probably do a deep dive on those guys soon and see if there's anyone that's kind of sticking out there. But for now, the answer would be Will Banfield followed by Austin Allen.
Agreed. Yeah, I would agree with a slight nod to Joe Mack, who, yeah, it's been a struggle for him so far this year, but it looks a little bit better this month. So, I mean, I would call him out as well. Another high school catcher. High school catchers, man, it's been a struggle for the Marlins with these high school catchers. But Banfield's doing it now. Mack, I think, is at his age right now, where Mack is, he's at least ahead of where Banfield was at his age. So I mean, there's something to be said for that as well. But yeah, it's got to be Banfield. I would also look at Paul McIntosh as well. There's questions on if he can stick at catcher, but that's an undrafted free agent who has just done a lot so far as a guy who cost the Marlins literally nothing. So, it would be Banfield, but a nod to Mac and a nod to McIntosh as well. But, yeah, I agree with Banfield.
Yeah, I did want to say shout out P-Mac. He's been good this year, but he's not that good defensively, and he could tell you that too. So.
Is that all we got, Ryan?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Thanks, y'all.
Thank you. Well, I guess we'll close it out at that. My parting thoughts are, why didn't I mention CJ Krohn as the Garrett Cooper replacement? And could that type of trade package be something the Marlins look for? Because those are, they packaged up two guys in one trade. Could they do that with St. Louis maybe? We'll go out on this round table here.
I just want to know if Miami was interested in Krohn at any point. Because I know Isaac could say this as well, and Eli, when in the podcast with Joe, he mentioned that they were looking at first baseman. So would Miami have shown interest in Krohn and Grinchuk as well, I guess. But that's the one thing I do want to know from, you know, Miami's end.
I don't know how much different Krohn is than Cooper. They have a lot in common.
I agree with that.
Krohn does? Does he? No, he does not. He is a pending free agent.
He does. He's got one more year.
CJ Krohn? Not from what I'm seeing.
I checked this like a couple weeks ago. I think he's under contract next year.
I will double check while we're on here. That does not sound correct.
$14 million deal.
And isn't he in the second year of that deal?
Yeah, Grant, what are you talking about? He's a free agent next season.
I use SpotRack. Is that like a bad sign?
Yeah, this is a very similar player to Garrett Cooper. It's a power first player, and what I'm seeing is a free agent. Okay. So there's really no difference from what they have in Garrett Cooper. So I don't think this guy was on their radar, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, the only difference is that he plays home games in Coors Field and it inflates his slugging.
Right.
But yeah, otherwise he's having a very similar, when you adjust for the environment he plays in, it's a very similar year that Cooper is having, and he hits from the right side. And the power upside is a little bit is higher than Cooper's, but also probably the feel as an overall hitter is a little lower than Cooper's. So that would just be a very marginal move. With Grichik, it's worth mentioning just because he's been playing exceptionally well lately, and even has the ability to fake it in center field. He's been playing a surprising amount of center field for the Rockies this year. How many starts in center field? About 20 games he's played in center field this far into his career. And so even when you take out the core stuff, he's been hitting pretty well, but the fit is kind of awkward still with him. With the Marlins, it is a lot easier to figure out a fit for somebody on the infield than it is on the outfield. So if you took Grichik's offense and you put it on Krohn, then that's a first baseman they may have gone out of their way to get. But this year, Grichik has been the much better hitter. It wasn't a clean fit, but yeah, for a team that needs offense, I wouldn't be surprised if they at least kick the tires on Grichik at some point.
All right, we'll go find it's also hard to find a guy who walks less than Cooper, but you have one in CJ Krohn. There's literally zero walks, strikeout, or home run in contact. So yeah, it's a 1-2 tool player, and the Marlins have another one just like him with Cooper. So on an expiry contract as well. So yeah, there was no fit here for Krohn, but good on the trade, man. I think that both teams will make out.
All right, we'll end it there. We probably will do a space on deadline day. I don't know about tomorrow. We will have to discuss this amongst us. But if not, we will be back at this time next Sunday to discuss what has transpired during deadline week in an all-important series coming up against the Philadelphia Phillies and another one over the weekend in Arlington, Texas. So I'll do it all for us, for Eli, for Alex, for Kevin, for Isaac, for Daniel, for all our speakers tonight. Thank you very much for joining us. We will see you this time next week. Thank you very much.